Welcome to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom with Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. On today's edition of Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, Gary talks with his special guest, Dr. Jeff Myers, President of Summit Ministries. They'll discuss the incredibly successful program that Summit has to help young Christians make the case for faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's Gary.
Well, you know, folks, Dr. Dobson has spent a good bit of his career, of course, fighting for faith, family, and freedom. But his focus has been American families. It's been an effort to help men and women, husbands and wives, build strong marriages. And it's also been an effort to help parents raise good, God-fearing children. And that's, again, a lifelong project for Dr. Dobson. He's written a tremendous number of books about it. And he's done, I think, almost impossible to measure good work in that area. And yet, is there someone listening that is not worried about what's happening to America's kids? There are so many signs that we've seen for decades that our kids are in trouble, our children are confused. Many of them over the years seem to have moved away from the gospel. There's a lot of research about this. And I know one of the things that parents, because I'm a parent myself and now a grandparent, Dr. Dobson and I have talked about this. One of the things we look for, all of us look for, is allies. Who's going to be on our side in this great enterprise of raising upstanding young men and women who can be the future citizens of our country and start their own families and so forth? Well, if you're looking for an ally, a lot of people have discovered over the years, you can't come up with a better ally than Summit Ministries. Summit Ministries has equipped students, parents, educators with a biblical worldview to lead with clarity and conviction and a culture that all too often is full of confusion. Summit specializes in immersive student conferences. I mean, if you participate, if your child or grandchild participates in one of their events, you're all in. From morning to night, you're going to get, that child's going to get, that grandchild's going to get a unique experience that will, contrary to what the local public school might be doing, not undermining what you as a Christian parent is teaching, but reinforcing. Giving that child or grandchild an opportunity to hear from other adults a reinforcing message of what you've tried to teach around the dinner table or in the church you attend. I'm joined by Dr. Jeff Myers, the president of Summit Ministries. Jeff is an educator, an entrepreneur. He's the author of 18 books, including Truth Changes Everything, How People of Faith Can Transform the World in Time of Crisis. I've been looking forward, Dr. Myers, to this conversation. You're a respected authority. Dr. Dobson and his wife, Shirley, send you their best regards. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. It is great to be with you. We love Doc and Shirley, and my wife, Stephanie, and I love the work that you do as well. We love following what you do, and Stephanie was telling me, if there's only one thing we look at in our email each day, it's going to be the one from Gary.
Oh, my goodness. I got to start charging something for that. I hear that a lot. In all seriousness, that is very encouraging to me when someone, particularly of your stature, says that, because I know you you have a lot of ways to get information, and I try in that end-of-day report to sort of give the nuggets that men and women of faith, followers of Jesus Christ, need to know about at a time when, if you just read the headlines, you can get really disoriented. You and I were talking a little bit before the show about what's happening among young people. And so let's start there. Gen Z, there's a lot of talk about Gen Z. First of all, I get these generations mixed up. All I know is I'm a boomer, and I feel it every morning when I get up. Who is Gen Z? And what good or bad do we know about them?
Well, Gen Zers, Gary, are the young adults who are between the ages of, say, 15 or 16 up to age 30. Above them is the millennial generation. Above them is Gen X. Above them would be the boomer generation. But there are clear differences between the generations based on how they access technology. So one key way to think of it is Gen Zers are the smartphone generation. Hmm. They have never gone to a dictionary to look up anything. They Google it. They get their news and all of their information from social media sites, mostly Instagram, TikTok, and some others that are similar to that. This is the generation that is in high school and in college at the present time and moving into their careers. So we care a lot about them. I mean, they're what, 15% of the population, but they are 100% of the future. They will end up being the leaders of our nation, whether they are prepared to do a good job or are not prepared.
Now, you've been doing Summit Ministries for quite a few years.
Well, Summit Ministries was started by David Noble in 1962. And then I attended as a student when I graduated from high school in the 1980s. Program had a tremendous effect on my life spiritually, but it also gave me the confidence that my biblical faith is defensible. So I went off to college with that perspective and then ultimately was able to come back and be an instructor, help develop curriculum, including a course called Understanding the Times, which is used all over the world by Christian students, and then ultimately to become president 14 years ago. So I am working with my third generation. So I'm Gen X.
Wow.
I worked with my own generation. I worked with the millennial generation, now working with Gen Z. And to make things even more confusing, next year we will begin welcoming the very first of Gen Alpha. So we get to start the alphabet all over again.
You know, as I age, a good way to test mental acuity will be whether somebody can name all these generations. But it is interesting how this is, I think, sort of a recent phenomena. And one of the things that we have to be a little careful about, of course, is generalizing about a whole group of people just based on the years they were born in. Although one can make certainly broad generalizations without describing every single individual. And we'll get into that a little bit. But before we go any further, describe for our listeners who may not be familiar with you, although I find if they're Christian parents, it's hard for me to believe they aren't familiar, what happens at a typical session of Summit Ministries?
Well, you mentioned immersive. That is a good word. We work hard, we play hard. At the Summit Ministries 12-day session, students would come to the campus. We would bring to them the top Christian thought leaders in biblical worldview, apologetics, economics, cultural issues, pro-life, pro-family. And as you mentioned, we give the students the evidence. Every child needs to have somebody who also says so. And we put these students in front of the world-class experts on all of these topics. Not only do they hear lectures from them, but they have a chance to personally sit and have meals with them, to have open question and answer sessions where they can ask any question they want. We encourage young adults to bring all of their tough questions with them. And then in our afternoon breaks, we play hard, we play sports, we hike, we whitewater raft, rock climb, all of those kinds of things. It is, according to the students who have attended, one of the most fulfilling experiences they've ever had in their lives because somebody took them seriously, Gary. Somebody actually listened. Somebody actually took their questions and said, no, those are good questions. You're a smart person. You're a curious person. You're a learner. And we want to show you how to draw closer to God through Jesus because he is the truth.
Yeah, I remember a number of years ago when I worked with Bill Bennett at the Department of Education and under the Reagan administration, one of the things Bennett was fond of saying, and I think he was actually quoting some professor of all things who actually seems to have stumbled around a truth, it was this idea that every child, every young person needs to have an adult who's crazy about them, an adult that puts that young person first in front of anything else. In front of a career, in front of the prospect of a new spouse, whatever it might be. And sadly, one of the marks of modern America has been that we have a pretty depressing number of young people who can legitimately conclude that there isn't somebody that puts them before anything else. And it sounds like one of the reasons Summit may be so successful is that when they're with you all during that period of time, they're getting that sense that you all care about these kids.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. So they'll sit in classes with 180, 200 other students. That has a power all of its own because they look around and realize, I am not alone and I am not crazy for wanting to be a Bible-believing person who lives out my convictions. But then we have small groups and one-on-one mentoring. Our student-staff ratio is 5 to 1. So there is an adult who personally cares for them, and not just college-age students, although a lot of our counselors and mentors are of that age, but also adults who are people who have children and grandchildren who are just there in around in the program, people they can share with who will love them unconditionally and then want to help them grow. And that motivates students to grow. I'll tell you one other thing, Gary, I love about this program is we actually, Dr. Kathy Cook comes in. She's an educational psychologist, loves Jesus, and she shows the students how everybody is smart. She talks about 8 different kinds of smart. There are a lot of young adults today who thought, well, I'm not book smart, I'm not logic smart, I'm not word smart, I guess I'm not smart, but they're all different kinds of smarts. And when young adults realize, oh, wait, I am smart, I am a learner, I can't tell you, it just opens up a whole world to them. I see their entire demeanor change. I see them open up and flower and want to learn and grow. It's so impressive what happens, and the Lord does all of this. But 1% of Gen Zers have a biblical worldview, according to George Barna. By the time the students finish at Summit Ministries, 95% say they claim a biblical worldview. And we track them even 10 years out, 85% still say they have a biblical worldview. And that's just way different than the outcome you would have for not having something like Summit in your life.
So it was summit.org, you said?
Summit.org.
So we'll let people go there rather than using the precious time we have to go into all the other ways to contact you. But I'm assuming that you don't accept everybody into the program, or am I wrong about that? Isn't there some degree of examination or questions that have to be answered before you bring a person into the experience?
Well, students fill out an application, and this may sound strange for a Christian program, but if a student says, I'm not a Christian, but I'm interested, I'm curious, I am a learner, to us, that's more important. So we will have students come who aren't sure where they stand, but if they say, I'm an atheist and I don't have any interest in learning anything, that's not a good candidate for us. They're not going to enjoy their time.
And they'll probably be provocative while they're there, right? I mean, in some ways, undermine the experience.
They can, sure. I remember a student from last summer, and everybody he met, he just would say, hi, I'm Zach. I'm an atheist. And, but he was a curious kid. He loved to learn. And by the end, he said to our team, there's no way I can be an atheist anymore. The evidence I've been presented with is just overwhelming.
What a wonderful story. That is fantastic. Let's get back to this younger generation, and specifically Generation Z. What are you beginning to notice? We talked briefly, as I alluded to earlier, that there are some hopeful signs out there that something may be happening, particularly among young men, which is sort of counterintuitive for a number of reasons. But you tell us, what are you seeing, and does it make you hopeful or make you worried about the future?
I am hopeful, Gary. We have the privilege every year of, in these intensive curriculum courses and programs that we do, to work with 70,000 young people. So we have a real insight, I believe, into the true characteristics of this generation. We're noticing something that I have never seen in the history of sociology, in the history of society, in the history of religion, that young men are becoming more interested in spiritual things than young women. They're more likely to identify as evangelicals. They're less likely to identify as nuns, people who check the nun box when they're asked about their religious preference. They're more likely to go to church. And they're more likely to apply what they learn in church to things like the way they vote. We started observing this trend a few years ago, and it is truly stunning. For all of the history of the world, it has been the case that women are always more interested in spiritual things, always more religious, always more likely to go to church than men. And that is starting to shift. Why is that important? Well, I have maintained for a long time, and this is maybe a controversial belief, but when men are godly, society has a big view of God. When men are not godly, society has a small view of God. When we have the opportunity to help raise up a godly generation of young men who will stand for the truth and fight against evil and injustice, young men who will protect the people who are around them rather than abuse them, young men who will work hard and seek to have families and provide for their families, you're not just talking about a revival. You're talking about an actual reformation, a whole new way of thinking about life and society. And Gen Z is huge. There are tens of millions of kids that this trend could start affecting right now.
Others have observed that not only is this happening among young men, and it's certainly exciting to see. I mean, there's been some really bizarre ideas out there about masculinity. And I think in many cases, redefining normal masculine behavior as somehow being dysfunctional or inappropriate or whatever. On the other hand, we've also seen men behaving badly and using masculinity in a way that I think all of us would be troubled by. So the idea of a godly masculine young man is something that I think all of us would agree would be good for America. But I've heard a lot of people observe that that's not only happening among young men, but among young women. There's some evidence that many of them are going off the rails. A friend of the ministry, Charlie Kirk, has actually talked, without going into a lot of detail, about what the research done by his group Turning Point is showing up. And when he starts talking about the results among young women, Charlie looks worried. And I wonder if you agree with that concern and what do you think could be the explanation for that?
The narrative, Gary, that young women hear today is that America is a patriarchy, and a patriarchy is evil. A patriarchy is whenever men are in charge of things. And so they look at things like the abortion issue. As we teach, we have 3 hours of teaching on this. We teach students to, in 5 minutes or less, be able to convince people who are in favor of abortion to change their mind. And we do that because so many young women just believe that it's merely a political issue. This is a way for men to try to subjugate women. And that's why there are many women out there today, mostly on the progressive left, who say things like all masculinity is toxic, that boys are bad. So we fight against that narrative. We believe that God designed men and boys and girls to become godly men and women, and he designed them to harmonize with one another. In fact, theologically, biologically, historically, societies do better when men and women learn to harmonize with one another. They do see the world somewhat differently. So that is really the next step. We've got to be thinking not only, oh, this is really great that we're seeing some trends toward in the right direction for young men, but when we can see young women move in that direction as well, I think it'll be great. I think we'll see it, Gary, because most of these young adults are now very cynical about the idea that there's no absolute truth. They're very cynical about this notion of we just speak our own truth. They're looking for something that really is true.
Mm. You know, Dr. Dobson and I years ago wrote that Children at Risk, the battle for the hearts and minds of our children. And we talked about a lot of the disturbing trends then. As a little aside, I think Dr. Dobson and I were both disappointed, not that we got the reaction that we did from the left, but there were Christian leaders who accused us of being unduly pessimistic and alarmist and trying to cause trouble and so forth. Every once in a while, I go back and look again at Children at Risk. And I'm sad to say that it may have seemed alarmist at the time, but everything we talked about has happened and things that didn't even cross our mind. The most obvious one that comes to mind today is this whole phenomena that human sexuality can be decided by who you think you are, not the biological reality of how you were actually born. And I wonder how that phenomena has influenced or affected Summit Ministries in your ministry, and whether you've ever had to deal with it in any direct way in the ministry itself, in sessions, et cetera.
That's a huge question. I want to put my vote toward your book. I thought that was a fantastic book. I thought it was very prophetic.
Thank you.
Children at Risk. I hope that people will still pick it up and look at it, because when you have a biblical base, you can make predictions about the future. So you can see if things keep going the way they are, this is where we will be. And it's shocking. But it's shocking in the way that a surgeon has to sort of cut the body open before they can begin the healing surgery. So on the issue of transgender and non-binary, this is a huge, huge question for Gen Zers. And what I'm going to say may be shocking to people, but up to, in different surveys, 25 to 40% of young adults in Gen Z say they identify as transgender or non-binary. The CDC says that it's 25%, one in four. Now, this does not mean they are involved in homosexual behavior. It does not mean that they've had a break with reality, although many people who are gender dysphoric have certainly had a break with reality. What it means is they just don't see how being male or female is relevant to how you live the rest of your life. And for young men and young women, it appears in a different form. Young women are convinced that we live in a patriarchy, and if they might actually be boys trapped in a girl's body, and if they could somehow become more like boys, they would be more successful. For boys, they've been told all of their lives boys are bad. And so if you can just learn to embrace your quote-unquote feminine side, then you'll be better off. So yes, we do have students come who are what I would call in gender confusion, or they're gender insecure. It's not the behavior they're involved in. Again, it's the attitude in their mind. They think that they've been born in the wrong body, and it's a horrifying thing they've been indoctrinated into, because it's not just somebody saying there's something wrong with your body, we need to fix it. It's that you, as your person, as your soul, you are wrong. You're wrong from start to finish. It's terrible. I remember one young woman came. She had been convinced by social media and her peers that she was a boy trapped in a girl's body. That's just, she saw herself in that way, to the point where she had begun taking masculinizing hormones because she thought it would give her some relief. And coming through Summit, she was able to, with the help, the loving help of her small group leader, come to realize that God had made her the way he did on purpose. And that she was believing these stereotypes that if you're a girl, then you have to only like girly things, you can't like boy things. All of these are cultural stereotypes that she realized, oh, so I'm not really a boy trapped in a girl's body. I just believed all of these stereotypes because I didn't really fit in with the girly culture. Mm-hmm. And by the time she left Summit, she said, I'm going to make a commitment to, I need to change my mind about who I am. I need to agree with God about who I am. That's the kind of change that you can see take place. But you can't just give lectures. You can't just send them videos. You can't just talk at them. You have to actually engage with them, hear what they think, hear their experience, and then show them a better way.
I assume you would agree with this. To have the public school system in any way feed into this confusion or encourage the confusion while pushing parents away, not informing them, or literally telling the child, don't talk to your mom and dad about that. You can trust me, the teacher, or the school psychologist, that is just unacceptable in a society like the United States, and arguably is in its own way a crime. You're literally risking the mental health of a child in the name of some relatively new and off-base ideology or deception.
You're so right. One thing you realize when you work with young adults is you just have to be very, very careful, because they're susceptible when people say, you feel confused, you feel at a loss in your own body, which every teenager does at some point in time. Well, we have an explanation for that. Take our gender survey and see which of 68 different genders you are. So young people are vulnerable to that. I do think that we do locate the problem in social media, but I think you're right, in public schools. And again, I'm not just here to bash one form of education or another, but half of the public schools in the United States of America have made it a priority to be what they call gender inclusive, to offer gender affirming care. And it's the school administrators who are forcing this. 60% of the teachers in a survey that was done by a teachers union said they hate this. They don't want to do it. Only 4% of teachers said they thought it is appropriate. But they are told every day in your class, you have to ask every student, what are your pronouns for today? You know, they have to have books in their class like Sparkle Boy and When Aiden Became a Brother and so forth. But it continually plants seeds of confusion. We don't want gender-confused kids. We want gender-confident kids, not kids who feel like I either have to be G.I. Joe or Barbie. We're not that.
Right.
But to recognize that, no, we don't all fall along a single spectrum here. There's a male spectrum. There's a female spectrum. God designed us this way on purpose so that we could bring the gifts of his design to everything that we do.
You've developed some material recently that addresses this specific question of Christian involvement in politics. And you know, there's some interesting statistics on Gen Z and their voting habits. And it seems to reflect some of the things we're talking about. That is that Gen Z men tended to vote even more overwhelmingly for conservative candidates in the last election. Whereas Gen Z young women went the other direction, so that the gender gap politically that we've seen among adults, older adults, seems even more pronounced in young Americans. But I'm wondering, in the time we have left, if you could address what I think you call some common myths that Christians are being told of all ages about why they should not be involved in the political process or the public debate or going to school board meetings or, you know, caring about who gets elected president and senator and all the rest of it. You know, over the years, I've run into a lot of great people who are quite satisfied to just sit in church and wait for Jesus to return. And I understand that impulse, but I don't think we're called to be so heavenly focused that we're of no earthly use. And as men and women of faith, if we just sit and wait, the public square will be filled with people with quite a different idea of what our country ought to look like. So could you talk to us a little bit about that, what philosophy drives your thinking about the obligation of Christian citizens in a free nation?
I appreciate you asking about the philosophy, because it is driven in that way. One thing we know to be true is whatever you believe about God will determine what you believe about the nature of reality. What you believe about reality will determine what you believe about what's right or wrong, which in turn will determine what you think is the value of life, what makes psychological health, what makes a healthy society, what makes a healthy economy, healthy legal structure, and a healthy political structure. So if you start off with the right assumptions that God has revealed to us in the Bible, and so we can look to his word for guidance, then you build a worldview that isn't just about your personal devotional life or the time you spend worshiping God in church. It's about everything, everywhere, all the time, which means it includes citizenship. It's not first and foremost about citizenship. That is a fruit of having a well-rooted tree based in God's nature and character. So we teach the students, and I think the main myth that we try to help them address is this, that you are not choosing, when you vote, the lesser of two evils. You are choosing to lessen evil. There are no perfect candidates. You're picking the one you think, based on the biblical principles that you hold in your conscience, that you believe will help reduce evil the most, that will bring the most flourishing for people, that will bring the most prosperity, that will keep crime under control and help everyday families succeed, that will stand for and respect life, that will stand for and respect marriage, and recognize the importance of parents in the lives of their children, all of those kinds of things. That has given a huge amount of relief to the Gen Z voters, because they're realizing, oh, so I'm not looking around for some kind of a, you know, movie character perfect candidate. I'm just one step at a time using my decisions to lessen evil. But we also tell them, Gary, and this is something that's, I know, core to everything that you do, your vote is like the starting gun of the race. It's not the whole race. It's just the initial step that you take being involved as a citizen. So making sure that you continue to research, find good information, and then stand for the truth as you have the opportunity to do it is critical. Every time a person takes a stand, they gain a little bit of courage.
Yes.
And over time, if they continue to do it, then they become an actual courageous person. And in a culture that's confused, people who can ring that bell of moral clarity are the ones who ultimately have the influence.
Mm, well put. You know, I often like to remind people that it was not a surprise to God that you ended up in America. You know, he knew exactly where you would end up, and it's one of the greatest blessings in the world you can get to have ended up in a country where there is such a wide degree of freedom, even though there's been a battle over that religious freedom in recent years. But if someone gives you a wonderful gift, and God did when he allowed us to be here, you're an ingrate if you don't try to take care of it, if you don't husband it and not allow somebody to mar it or hurt it. So in some ways, you're really disrespecting this wonderful blessing that God gave us by being born in a place where we could freely follow Jesus Christ and worship without fear.
I love that. When my children were younger, I shared with them our family's mission, which is to be a blessing to the nations of the earth. God has not given us the opportunity to be Americans just by accident, as you said. There are certain things about ourselves we can't change: where we were born, what race we are, how many siblings we have, who those siblings are, our gender. All of those things have been given to us as a blessing from God, not just so that we can live more prosperously, but so that we can in turn be a blessing to others. Mm-hmm. And young people take on that attitude. I'll tell you one thing, it really helps lower their anxiety. It really helps lower their levels of depression and confusion and fear about what is happening in society, because they say, you know what, I don't have to make a decision today that's going to save the entire world. I just do one thing right. And then every day I try to do one more thing right. And over time, you build a really great life that's outward focused, not inward focused.
Dr. Myers, I don't know if over time your outlook might have changed on this. I mean, as men and women of faith, we're called, obviously, to be optimistic because we know the end of the story, and that's a great comfort. But on a more short-term basis, and in this particular place we find ourselves in, would you say you're optimistic or pessimistic about America's ability to get through all of this and be restored as as what the founders called a shining city upon a hill?
Well, a pessimist is a person who says it can't possibly get any worse. An optimist says, oh, yes, it can. So I like the term hope more than I like the term optimism, because I'm trying to be realistic about the challenges that we actually face. But hope is an eternal thing. Hope is a deposit that God has given to us from eternity to live in the world that we're a part of. And Scripture says that because of God's great mercy, he has given us a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. I hold to that. I teach that to students, and I find that that is the lifeline that really helps them. But it always is going to go back to, well, there are a lot of people who are listening to the show right now. What are we going to do differently? Are we going to engage with our families differently, with our children? Are we going to learn how to stand for what we know is true? And if we make those everyday steps, you know, it's a process, one day at a time. And today is day one, not tomorrow, not next week, not next year. Mm.
Dr. Myers, it's been great to spend this time with you. I know our audience is really enjoying this show, and I know that Dr. Dobson and Shirley will love hearing it too. You all share the same heart for American young people and for this great country and for the gospel of Jesus Christ. So thank you for being part of Family Talk as we continue to do everything we can at the James Dobson Family Institute to promote faith, family, and freedom. Let's close by taking one more shot at this. And in case there's somebody out there that doesn't know about your work, how can they find out more about you? And where would they go? And what's coming up that might be encouraging for them to participate in?
Yes, Summit Ministries equips and supports the rising generation to embrace God's truth and champion a biblical worldview. And we want to come alongside the families of those who are listening right now. Just go to summit.org and you can find out how to get in touch with us. If you're looking for a program this summer for young men, all of our seats and all of our programs are full except for, and Lookout Mountain, Georgia, we do have some seats left open for young men 16 to 22 years of age. We also have a virtual program that's for young people who are 13 and up, so a little bit broader of an audience. And I can promise you, it'll be the most fascinating week of their summer, that it'll be fun and energizing, and they will grow in their faith.
That's wonderful, Dr. Myers. Thanks again for being part of our show today and sharing the wonderful work of your ministry. God bless you and Summit Ministries. And thank all of you for tuning in. Until we talk again, God bless.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.